You ever been counted out? Ever had to fight for a future they said you'll never have? Then you're in the right place. This is Break Free, where resilience meets redemption. Where real stories tear down fake ceilings and freedom takes root. Your pain has a purpose. Your scars have a sound. And your breakthrough is louder than your breakdown. You can't expect change when you're stuck. Stuck in the same patterns, same mindset, same habits, same circles. It's time to break free. Guess who's Bizek? How y'all doing? Welcome back to Break Free Podcast. I am your host, Free, and today we are in for another treat. I have not only one of my friends, but I consider him my brother. And guys, when I tell you, especially you men, y'all are in for a treat today. Help me welcome Arthur Jones.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, Art.
What's going on, Free?
I finally got you on the.
You finally got me on the couch.
Thank you for coming by. Yeah. Thank you for your willingness to share. Right. I know this is your first time, like telling your story. Right. So I, you know, thinking there may be a little bit of apprehension, but I do believe like this is something that you are supposed to do.
I love it.
You love it? Yeah. You welcome the challenge? Because yeah. You always say, oh, if you don't want to be blessed, then tell God to stop blessing you then. Yeah.
It's always going to be a nervousness with me because it's God. Mm-hmm. But I love it.
You love it? Yeah. And I'm sitting here looking at you today. You are a total different man than you were some years ago. With you, Arthur, it's so many like layers.
You can say it. Being that we brothers, you can say it. I look good on You can say it.
Yes, yeah, bro. You look good. No, but seriously, you have done a completely, I don't even know if to say it's if you did it.
No, I ain't
God.
It.
Yeah.
It wasn't me. Mm-hmm. I am the definition of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire. Mm-hmm. You know, people make this statement, you know, church stuff. I'm glad I don't look like what I've been through. You know, I don't look like what I've been through, for real.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I remember the first time that I seen your mugshot.
Right.
No, I didn't see a mugshot at first. I saw a club picture. Yeah. And you had them black Air Force Ones on.
Yeah.
And them Dre, and you was sitting up against, and I said, boy, you had the devil in your eyes.
Yeah. Let me show y'all what she talking about. Let me show y'all the picture that she talking about.
Do y'all see that look? Do y'all see that look? Right there, that right here. In that black, I mean, it just looks like Arthur, like he was possessed with something.
And see these pictures right here. This is the notorious Ottbot right here. Ottbot. But when I got locked up, they said, "Will Arthur Jones please stay?"
Yeah.
He did all the trouble, but I did all the time.
Mm. Yeah. So Ottbot, that's what they used to call you.
All right, yep.
And where did that name come from?
My name is Arthur. Mm-hmm. So they call me Ott for short. Then I think one of my homeboys was joking and put Ottbot in it. And when Notorious Big died, I took the Notorious.
Oh, because you was Notorious.
Right.
So you come from Augusta, right?
Right.
And you grew up in a household of?
One, just the mom.
Just the mom. Right. And you had any siblings?
Yeah, it was six of us, three boys, three girls. Yeah. My sister, the older sister, she has passed away. And I got a brother that's under me that's doing a life sentence.
And do you feel like you hopped off the porch at a young age, or do you feel like, because was the home structure, like did you grow up in a structure home?
The home really wasn't structured, but my mom was old school. So I didn't jump off the porch early. Mm-hmm. I want to say I jumped off the porch late compared to other people. When we moved to Southside is an area where we stayed at, it was called a hump. So at the hump, all the action went on. My mom would never let us go to the hump. And so it was other kids, other homeboys that went to the hump. I got one particular homeboy that you met already. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to use no names. But that's my brother. Like, he was a kid and I was a kid, but he was able to go outside to the hump. So he would come to my window, because we stayed in a two-story apartment. He would come to my window and I'd be looking out the window at him. He'd be like, "You can't come outside." So that's, and so me and him, we've been together, like, we got about 39, going on 40 years together.
Did you feel like he was missing anything when he'd be outside of the window like, "Yo, you can't come outside"?
Yeah, so I didn't know what I was missing. Mm-hmm. And so, because I was just a kid, I think I moved to the project when I was like 11, no, maybe 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know what I was missing until I got out there.
Yeah. And what do you feel like drew you to the streets?
The money. And I was already bad, just bad. But my mom had a tight grip on us. Mm-hmm. You know, she was old school. You couldn't curse in front of her. You couldn't drink. If you weren't 21, you couldn't drink. You couldn't eat in the living room. You had to eat in the kitchen. And we got whoopings. So it was different.
So what do you feel like? What was your first taste of the streets?
So when I was able to get past the hump, that was the taste. Mm. Yeah, because I stayed at my window, but I could see all of the drug dealers, all of the people that was older than me. But then once I got a chance to go past the hump, that's when my eyes was open to a lot of other stuff.
And it made you want to get out there? Or was it like lack of, did y'all not have?
Yeah, it was mainly the money. Just not having. Not having new shoes. Not having new clothes. My mama, she didn't have it. It was six of us and no man around. So she did the best she could.
Do you feel like that affected your life without a man being around?
It definitely did. Mm-hmm. So there was no man to give structure. Before stepdaddy came along. So I had a stepdad that came along, and I didn't look at him like that because of the physical abuse that he gave to my mom. Mm-hmm. So I didn't look at him like that, but I didn't even know, even though he was in the household, I didn't look at him like that, but I grabbed some of his characteristics. He would make us eat. All sit down and eat. He would help us with our homework. But I just felt like he showed more favoritism to his children than me and my brother because we wasn't his biological children.
But do you also feel like it could have been because you was kind of bad?
No, it could have been bad too. But me and my brother used to watch him sneak and give my other siblings, my sister and her sister, money and wouldn't give it to us.
Did that make you resent him or resent your mom for being with him? Did you ever tell your mom, like, he get him money and don't give us none?
No, we just stole the money.
Stole it?
Yeah, so my stepdad was, he ran like a bootleg house. Mm-hmm. And so he sold alcohol. So we knew he sold alcohol, he put the money in a certain place in the cup in the cabinet.
So your mom was strict on y'all.
Right.
But was with a bootlegger.
Right. And then she ended up becoming a bootlegger too.
She did?
Yeah.
Well, do you feel like she did that out of desperation becoming
a bootlegger? Yeah, everything was out of desperation. Everything. Money was everything. That's the reason why everybody's in trouble right now. Mm-hmm. It's mainly money.
You feel like the kids that we deal with?
Everything goes back to money. You got some kids, you got some suburb kids that's just getting into stuff, you know, but don't have to. But if you talk to the average hood kid, it's money. The hood kids are trying to get out of the hood to the suburbs. And the suburb kids are trying to get out of the suburbs to the hood.
I definitely was like that. I always wanted to be. I never grew up in the projects or anything like that. But that's where I wanted to be.
Right.
That's where I wanted to be. And I don't even know to this day, what was it about it that just attracted me to? I just wanted to be in the hood. Yeah, I just wanted to be in the hood. So you started selling. What was like? What kind of crimes did you commit?
So first it was stealing. We just was stealing. 12, 13 years old. We just were bad. They had this place where you could sell aluminum. So instead of us saving up cans, we would wait till you save up all your cans and then go in your backyard and steal the cans and go sell them to the people.
So So it started off with stealing. No, well, you were stealing from the stepdad, too.
Yeah, we were stealing from him, too. That's when stealing from him when it first started, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then so stealing escalated into.
But we didn't get too much from him, because he was kind of strict, too. So mm-hmm. we would steal like a dollar or two.
I was wasting y'all time. Y'all was petting us.
We were trying to steal something that wasn't missing. So he wouldn't miss it. Mm-hmm. Or if he do miss it, it wouldn't have been a big issue. So we just going down to the
candy store. Yeah. And then so stealing escalated into.
Stealing more. Mm-hmm. So after that, I'm in middle school. So back then, kids can just go into the grocery store, go into the store, and not be watched. So I would take my book bag, go into the store, rack a whole king size sneaker box in the book bag.
Would you sell it to the sneaker box?
And then I go sell it to the white kids in school.
You'll double it.
Double it. It's really free because I stole it.
And then after that, like as you get into adulthood, tell me like how is it that you ended up in prison?
Yeah, so once the stealing came along, you know, you went to YDC a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You know, just as a slap on the wrist. Then the drugs came along. So once the drugs came along, it was over with. Like and we weren't even making a lot of money. It just was now I could buy my own shoes. You know, mm-hmm. now I can buy clothes. Mm-hmm. Like I started my ninth grade year in school with two pair of pants. And so it was this teacher, I never forget it. I think I can call her name, Miss Gilliard. Mm-hmm. She was my homeroom teacher. She tried her best to keep me in school. And I used to talk to her. She was that teacher. And I said, there's no way possible I can keep coming to school. It's 5 days in a week and I only got two pair of pants. And so she got me through the ninth grade, and I passed and went to the 10th grade. But after that, the dope came along.
So you dropped out of school?
So I was selling drugs, and we were still going to school. Mm-hmm. That's why it's very important to try to catch the person before they get out of school. Because if someone would have been coming into the school, talking to us and trying to grab us then... Mm-hmm. Then they probably would have caught me. But there was no one coming into the schools back then to talk to the kids, keep the kids. So I'm selling drugs now. I'm buying my own shoes. And I got a car now. I got rims. I'm, you know.
And with the rims come the girls.
With the rims come the girls.
Yeah. And so that's what motivated you to stay in school, because now I could be fly. I could be first.
Right. And so I stayed in school, but I really wasn't in school. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was really just coming to school. After a while, I was just coming to school just to show off or whatever. It was just, you know, you coming to school because you got to go. But it's really to just show that you know, you driving, you got a car, you got clothes, you got jewelry now.
So when you say, like, they ain't had nobody coming into school, I know what you mean, but for the audience, what do you mean?
So you didn't have mentors, you didn't have programs, you didn't have people coming into the schools to try to stop these kids like they do now. They have a lot of programs in place now, but back then, they didn't, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I got kicked out of school my 10th grade year because I wouldn't give the principal my beeper. And to this day, I believe that was the worst mistake I ever made in my life. Mm. He said, you're going to give me your beeper or you're going to get out of here. And back then, all the plays was on the beeper.
Was he going to give it back?
He wasn't going to give it back because I hadn't got caught and talked to about it before. So he wanted to take it. And at the time, I didn't think all I was going to do is just gave you the beeper and got another one.
But
in my head, no, you better get my, I got all my plays on this beeper. No, sir, you can't have it.
And then you feel like that's the not finishing school is where it made you jump head first to
right.
the street.
So I'm full time now because I don't have to come to school no more. Mm-hmm. So once I denied him the beeper, he kicked me out. I left and I never mm-hmm. came back.
And then, was you still living at home then?
I was still living at home.
And your mom went for you dropping out of school?
Yeah, well, it was like over with at that time. I was, you know, doing my thing. Mm-hmm. So mama could do what she could do for a certain period of time, but over a period of time after that, it's over with. Like, you really grown, but you ain't.
Because you still, I don't know about nobody else, but in my household, Brad 30 years old almost. And guess what? He still know. He come to my, you come stay with me. Ain't no eating upstairs. Ain't no this, ain't no that. And that's what I mean. That's what I stand on. Yeah. So I don't care how old you are. You come to my, it's my house, it's my rules.
Yeah, but we get ready to get out of mama house. We transitioning from mama house because now, you know, I'm making money, so I'm dealing with females now. Mm-hmm. So now it's, you know, you got a baby done came. Then you got babies coming.
Yeah, because we need to touch on that too. You have how many children?
So the way I keep a count of it, I got 8 kids and a wife. I got 6, 7 biological children. And I got 1 stepchild. I got 2 kids that's 2 kids that still call me dad to this day. Mm-hmm. That from back in the days. So I consider those my kids, but I have a kid that's not my biological child that stays in the house with me.
And so how many baby mothers do you have?
6.
Arthur, that is a lot of women. Yeah. That is a lot of women. That is a lot of baby mothers. That is a lot. You got 6 baby mamas?
6.
Are any of them ghetto twins? Any of the kids ghetto twins?
No, so I got two kids that's kind of close to the same age. I was on the run, and I was dealing with 2 females, and both of them got pregnant. So both of them had the baby while I was locked up.
And how old are the kids?
Katie is 17, I want to say 17. Mm-hmm. And the other one, I want to say 19 or Mama said
they can't be that far. Like
18
to
19,
pregnant.
Something like that.
They ghetto twins, and I think he just you know what ghetto twins are, right?
No.
Ghetto twins are 2 women are pregnant at the same time.
Yeah.
And then they had a baby in the same year.
Yeah, I don't think they was pregnant at the exact same time, I think. But I know I got both of them pregnant before I got locked up.
And so, you know, now, Arthur today, and Akba, back then, like how do you view that?
Yeah, so it's not good, right?
Why do you like to use condoms, sir?
So that's a good question too. but so when you come from a lifestyle, so I came from a lifestyle of poor. Mama didn't have nothing, so we all of our clothes was hand me down. Nothing was name brand. So when you come from that, your holler game, you ain't really got one, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but once you, because like, and even my sister-in-law, she joked with me to this day, right? She said, you just started looking good.
I'm saying the money make you look good. Like,
so my sister-in-law, she said, my sister was messing with you, you was ugly. You
know what I'm saying? Oh, so you saying like you had to have a good, strong game.
So her sister thought I was everything, but she said, man, you just started looking good, you know, these couple years. We both laughed about it. I said, you might be right.
Yeah. Did you ever have a problem? Like, did the baby moms get along or was it like confusion?
I can't really say that so you got your rival women, so like these two rivaled against each other. Like, you know, you'll have a woman where she have a problem. She won't have a problem with nobody else except her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you could be with anybody except her.
Right, except her.
Why are women like that?
So it's because y'all territorial. That's all it is.
Oh, okay.
So if you think about and any woman that, if you really think about this, the woman that you was dealing with, I mean, the man that you was dealing with and you caught him cheating with that woman, that's your rivalry. And so if her name Mary and you call him with Mary and every time you look around, he's sneaking off and catching you with Mary. Even if y'all fall off, even if y'all don't be together no more, long as he don't be with Mary. Like he can, if he in a relationship with another female and they get married and they become the president, that's great. Long as it ain't with Mary.
That's true. That's true. That's definitely true. And you feel like that's because we're territorial? And where do you feel like it derives from? Yeah.
So your territorial spirit from the woman comes from Adam and Eve. Mm-hmm. Like Eve was the first one on the scene. If you notice, every female is territory. And not to liken a female to an animal, but if you get a female dog, she's territorial. Like, so Eve was the only one on the scene. There was no competition.
Yeah.
Eve was the only one on the scene.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And yeah. So when you with your dude, mm-hmm. in your head, I'm the only one on the scene. Mm-hmm. And so when another female come around, because we say, oh, that's my sister. Even when you say that's my sister, being that you're the only one on the scene in your head, you want to make sure that's your sister.
What do you mean, like real sister or play sister?
Either or. You want to make sure. Because everybody that says sister, you probably don't hear them.
Thank you. Everybody that wants, say it again, Arthur.
Everybody that say that my sister, sometimes they be the hit them.
And that's what I don't get. Yeah. Like, I don't get how it be like, if I say somebody's my play brother, that's really my play brother.
Right.
I don't do that, well, we messed around and now we cool. It's okay to be cool, but I'm not saying you my brother.
Yeah, there's no way possible. The only way a man can classify a woman as his sister if he has not had sex with her.
They ain't gonna like you for that. You know, the men gonna eat you up in the comments.
Yeah, I'm ready because if you had sex with her, mm-hmm. there's a connection is there. So you saying that we done had sex, but now, no, you my sister now. No, it don't work that way.
You don't feel like that's possible. Yeah,
because if my woman know that I've had sex with her, how she gonna be able to trust us around each other? Because sisters and brothers, now we can go out to eat by ourselves. We don't have to have, if we sisters and we really just friends, we can go out on a business dinner. You think your girl gonna let you go out on a business dinner with somebody you call your sister that y'all done had sex with and she got them heels on and looking good, but she still sis? If you had sex with her, you erase that thought. So yeah, you may not see her like that. Yeah, I understand that. But so you don't remember when you bust her. You done forgot all about that. So you mean to tell me this is my sister, mm-hmm. but we out eating and it's harmless. I'm drinking and feeling good. She drinking and feeling good. She look good. We already got a chemistry already because we done been intimate. Somebody gonna say, no, bruh. No, sis. It ain't going down like that. Y'all, I'm sorry, it's not going down like that.
Right. No. So, Arthur, your wife, y'all been together how long now?
Oh, man, I'm going to get in trouble if I get this wrong.
I shouldn't ask.
So, I met my wife when she was, I want to say, either 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't know that was going to be your wife.
She knew it.
Tell them what she said to you.
So my wife used to always tell me, she said, you're going to be my husband. And at the time, I had three girlfriends. So in my head.
They all knew about each other.
Yeah. But in my head, I said, there's no way possible that I'm going to be your wife. Mm-hmm. I mean, your husband. Like, mm-hmm. I ain't nobody husband. You know? And so I used the territorial spirit. So I kept three females. You got a main woman, you got a side chick, the second one, and you got a third chick. So watch this. So the main chick knows she's over everybody else. And so the second, she ain't letting nobody take this spot. The second chick trying to get in where she fit in because she want to be your main chick. So she ain't going to get out the way and she going to do everything that she assumed the main chick ain't doing. The third chick is the fun chick. She got in her head, I'm going to knock both of them out. They just don't even know it. So now it ain't even about me no more. Mm. They don't want to lose to each other. She's saying, I'm not going to lose to these two. She's saying, I'm going to get him. And she's saying, I'm going to knock both of them out.
And you saying?
Go at it. Go at it.
Y'all, this the old Arthur. This the Arthur. He not like that now.
And so, but you'll think now, so the guy think, oh, I'm on top of my game. I got game. No, it ain't even about you no more. It's the territorial spirit that the women can't control. I don't want to lose to her. It ain't even about you no more. If it was a fourth chick, you could have him. She can't have him, though.
Yeah, that is about right. Your wife, so you felt like...
So my wife, this is the only, and this is how I know it was divine. Mm-hmm. At first, I didn't know. Over years, I found out, you know, as I got older. But the Bible says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing mm-hmm. and obtains favor. Meaning that you find the woman don't find you. Mm-hmm. My wife is the only female that I've ever went to and hollered at. Every other female that I've ever been dealing with, somebody always said, I got a friend when I holler at you. My wife is the only female that I saw myself, by myself, and wanted to know, who is that? Yeah. We get this story kind of twisted. I met her walking by the graveyard. She said it was closest to some street or something, right? Mm-hmm. But I remember it like it was yesterday. I hadn't been up all night selling drugs. I was in one of my homeboy's car. He was on the drugs, and I was serving him, so I kept the car. I had been up all night, and I seen her walking, and I was like, "Dang, who was that?"
Yeah.
But I was dirty. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to go and holler at her and miss the opportunity, but I didn't want to try to run home and get clean and never see her again. Mm-hmm. So I took the chance and I pulled up. And I said, hey, what's up? I think I asked her what her name was, asked her where she was going. And she said, I'm going to Southside to visit my cousin. Mm-hmm. She said, Southside. I said, oh, you going to my hood? I said, I'll see you later. And I shot straight to the house and got dressed. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, we clicked. The rest was history, like.
And she stayed there because then at that time you still was in the streets.
So she didn't know. She didn't know I was that guy. Mm-hmm. She didn't know this guy was an idiot, had multiple females. She didn't know. In her head, I was her boyfriend.
So you kept her shield away from all.
Right, right.
So she had no idea that there was two other chicks in competition.
She had no idea
for her spot.
She had no idea.
But they knew about her.
They probably did know about her. But once she found out that this Negro got all type of females and I'm not his only chick, then her eyes was open.
How she found out?
I don't know specifically how, but it was one incident where I would always come see her in Atlanta, right? Mm-hmm. So it don't matter who going to Atlanta, why we going to Atlanta, I'm always going to go see her. So I think I had to go to court or something. It was something going on that I hadn't got in trouble up here. And I had my other female that I messed with, and we came up here. And because I'm a routine type of person, I go to the same hotel, and she knew it. So I go see her, I leave the other female in the hotel, I go see her, and then I leave her and come back to the hotel. So my wife, she was my wife at the time, she comes back to the hotel and tell the housekeeping lady she left her key in the room and she needed to open the door.
And the housekeeper opened the door? The
housekeeper opened the door.
And what was y'all in there doing?
We just laying in the bed asleep. So she tapped me and I looked up. She was in the room. And the female was on the other side.
And what happened?
She just left. She left. She looked and she left.
Did you get up and try to go behind her?
I don't think I did. I was busted. I was, you know.
So how did you work your way back in? Like, what did you do?
So I can't really remember, but I know she was mad, but she was in love by then. Like, so, you know, I knew that movie Casino with Lester. Yeah, mm-hmm. She was in love with Lester.
Ooh, Lester was a low down dirty dog. If y'all ain't never seen, ooh, yeah. Lester took Ginger through there.
But she said Lester raised her. So when I met my soon to be wife when she was young. Mm-hmm. And so, besides the buffoonery I was in, I was a good dude to her, you know? And so once she found that out, the relationship kind of like broke up. We stayed friends. She, every time I got in trouble, she was the one I ran to.
So she was your safe haven.
She was like, yeah. So if I got a lot of issues going on in Augusta, when I came to Atlanta, and the best way I described it to her, it was like, when I was in Augusta, I had a book bag full of rocks in my pocket, in my bag. It was heavy. But when I got to her, she took the book bag off. So we would kick it, hang out. But then when I left, I had to put the book bag back on. So she was always my friend. Like, she was always my friend. Every time I got in trouble, it was not a question. We just talked about this and laughed about it, telling our daughter about it. She was like, she said, I was just crazy.
But Arthur, why is it that men, you know this is the one, you know she's the one that is good for you, your safety net, all that. Why you just can't do right by
it? I didn't know it at the time. Like, I didn't know it. Like, so I'm blinded by the streets. Mm-hmm. The drugs, the women.
Were you on drugs or just selling drugs?
So I was an alcoholic. So I drank alcohol from sun up to sundown. So, like.
Sun up to sundown?
Sun up to sundown.
Yeah.
I stayed on alcohol. I drank Budweiser's for breakfast. Like, it was normal. Everybody, some people get up and drink water. I'm going to give me a Budweiser.
And we were like, what would your friend? Nobody would say nothing to you.
Everybody around me was drunk. Everybody but Wise was in.
So how did you function? Because at one time, wasn't you robbing?
Yeah, so when you drunk, when I'm to a place where I'm out of it, everybody ready to get away from me because they know I'm going to do something stupid.
Stupid like?
Like anything. Like if we had a restaurant, they used to call me the Tasmanian Devil. Because they said when I spin around or get drunk, I just turn into a totally different person. And so I can remember one situation, me and my homeboy, and just another, he's a brother to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm drunk. And they got an all-star game, I think, in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm, 2004.
And I'm trying to get to the all-star game. And my homeboy and his family having a family gathering in Savannah. And some kind of way, instead of us going to Atlanta, we go to Savannah. But I'm drunk and I can't drive. And I'm trying to make the female that I'm with drive me to the All-Star game. Because mm-hmm. I'm drunk, I can't drive. So I done went to the hotel where my homeboy, his family was, and I done cussed everybody out. I done cussed in front of the mama and everything. I don't know none of this. So I said, you gonna drive me to Atlanta? So she gets in the car and she's scared. So she starts driving. I pass out. She turns back around, get a hotel in Savannah and leave me in the car. So when I wake up, I'm looking around. I don't know where I'm at.
And at no point, like when during this time of your life, when you on alcohol, did you feel like you was addicted to it or did you feel like you needed it to cope?
Yeah, it wasn't. It just was drinking it.
Or did you feel like this was something to do?
Like, that's all it was. I never thought that I was an alcoholic. I never thought I was addicted to alcohol. It was just
a way of life for you.
Yeah, it was normal. It was like, put on your shirt, put on your jeans, grab your gun, get your dope, get a Budweiser.
And what was the stopping point for you with alcohol? What made you stop drinking alcohol?
Jail. So,
but most people go to jail and come home. Yeah, and still start
so
back.
So I've been to jail a lot of times, right? Mm-hmm. But this last time I went to jail, because I used to pray.
Even when you were alcoholic.
Even when I was alcoholic,
you felt like you had a relationship with God.
So in '98, I went to boot camp, and I got saved in '98. I met a young boy in boot camp. And he used to have Bible study, and he told me about Jesus. And I got saved in 1998 in a boot camp. But if you saw me from 1999, you would say, there's no possible way this guy is saved. Because it seemed like once I got saved, I turned into a monster.
Do you feel like that was the work of an enemy? Or?
Yeah, because my wife told me this. She wrote me a letter one time I was locked up, and she said, the devil has been trying to destroy you for a long time because he has peeked into your future. And so God always saw this guy, but the devil loved it, the other guy.
Akbar.
Yeah. And I pulled a lot of people in. Like, if everybody around me parted, everybody around me got drunk.
Because you were like the king of parties, right?
Yeah, so I was the life of the I was the life of the party.
And you threw the best parties.
And I threw the best parties. Come on with it.
Yeah. Tell us about them parties. Yeah. Because I remember, like, me and you talking, right?
Right.
And so, like, a lot of people disagreed with me when Puffy got in trouble.
Right.
And, you know, I was getting, like, you know, arguments or whatever. Not arguments, but disagreements. And my take on it was that people are grown, right? And as long as a woman is not being forced to do something,
right,
then that is free will. And you know, they kept saying sex trafficking. Right. But I was saying he didn't sex traffic no minors. And Arthur, whether people want to agree or not,
yeah,
right? Anytime a dude is getting money, whether it's a rapper, a street boy, a pastor, whatever it is, right? When you send for a woman to come see you in another state,
right,
and y'all have sex, what is that? Yeah. That's sex trafficking. So you can't, you know, I just wasn't really in agreement with everybody else when it came to that.
Well, it's, most of the people that are giving a comment on it, they haven't lived their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I lived it. I got a homegirl. She posted on Facebook. She said, Cassie better be glad she ain't running to Arthur Jones.
All right, so you were never a woman beater, though.
No, so I can't say I was a woman beater, but I will slap one. So I can't say now, and I don't know, that came out a little harsh.
No. But guess what? I need you to be harsh, and I need you to tell the reality of what it is, because Arthur, right now, believe it or not, there's a 30-something-year-old man out there, right?
Yeah.
That's getting money. Yeah, whether he's getting it in the street, however he's getting it, right? And in that mind frame, we feel like we're doing it right. We feel like we're just living life. It's things me and my boyfriend, like when I was getting money, we was young, rich, and wild.
Right.
Yeah, so I want you to be like graphic. I want you to tell.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because my stepdad beat my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw my mom get beat, like for real. So it should have been, I should have never touched a female because of what I saw my mom do. So, but what I saw my mom go through, it hit me like this. And so being that I'm not a player no more, I can give this secret out now. But the one thing that a female never knew, that if they wanted to crush me, all they had to do is cry in front of me. It crush me to see a female cry.
Why do you think that?
And I believe it's because of seeing my mom get hurt.
Mm.
So I could be doing all type of stuff. I could be drunk. If you start crying, I'm gonna try to play it off as best as I can. But you got me.
Mm. And so if any of the girls had to start crying at the parties.
So the gangster parties was Some of them was forced, but most of them, everybody was in on it. Like,
and what would go on at a gangster party?
Well, it was everything. Like, so Puffy them, they parties was like, Puff was kind of weird. So we called them gangster parties because it was a bunch of females and a bunch of dudes doing whatever with each other. And Tupac had the song out, Gangster Party. So that's when we came up with the name of it. And so after that, like, all of the homeboys that I ran with in Southside, you had a female. So, like, if Johnny had a female and me and Johnny is friends, and I'm trying to holler this female right here, but she won't bite, but she like Johnny. So I put Johnny up on game and let Johnny know how to get her so that I can get her. So Johnny will get her, tell her what she need to hear, and then Johnny will put me down with her. And so when I get her, I know I got her through Johnny, but I tell her, I told you I was going to get you.
So like, y'all would share women?
We would share them.
And like, it didn't matter. No, y'all didn't fall out over women.
We ain't fall out. So that was our rule. Like, we'll never fall out about a female. Like, the rule was, hit her. Don't. So you know how, like, you'll have.
When he say hit, he don't mean physically hit her.
You know, having sex. Have sex with her. So if me and Johnny partners, right,
mm-hmm.
His girl like me, but I don't mess with her. She go back and tell him. He find, you know, like, so, no, so, me and Johnny partners, he got an old lady. She trying to holler at me, but, you know, Johnny my partner, so I don't mess with her. Then we got another partner, he don't care. He hit her. Mm-hmm. So all this time, you don't even have a clue that he hitting your shoulder. So if I don't mess with her and you find out about it, I say, hey, man, shawty trying to mess with me, man. Then she start crying and lying. He lying. Then you stay with her because what? Now you torn. Do I believe my partner or do I believe my old lady?
Yeah.
But if I hit her and I come back and say, shawty no good, man, I bust her. Then it's on you to do whatever you want to do.
And these women, when y'all would have, give me like the wildest night that y'all had. Give me the, walk me through the wildest night of one of y'all parties.
It's a lot of wild.
You told me some wild ones. I just want to see what you're
going to
tell.
Well, I'm trying to keep it PG-13. So I'm going to just give you we're gonna get to the transformation too. I'm just giving y'all my story right now, because I can't give you the story, mm-hmm. I can't give you the glory mm-hmm. without giving you the story.
Right.
So, and to give y'all illustrations before I go into it, Paul killed up the Christians. Mm-hmm. Paul used to persecute the Christians.
Silas. Mm-hmm.
So Paul will talk about it. Paul will like, man, I used to be doing this and I used to be doing that. When I was on that donkey, God knocked me off that donkey and blinded me. Mm-hmm. That's his testimony. So my testimony is my testimony, not to brag about it. And I'm going to give you what God has shown me concerning it. But to name one, my brother got out from doing, I think, 6 years. And we got a limousine. We picked up. I took my brother shopping, bought him some clothes, and then the limousine picked up me, my brother, a couple of the other homeboys, and I think maybe two or three females. And so we in the car, I tell my brother, I said, they're gonna do anything you tell them to do. And he was like, because he ain't never been in a gangster party before. He was like, man, go ahead on, man, you tripping. I said, let me explain to you like this. Act like they Chinese. And I'm Chinese, I speak Chinese, and you're American. I say, tell me what you want me to tell them to do, and I'm going to translate it to them. And so he was like, man, you tripping, man. Tell them to take all their clothes off then. So I said, Simon said, take all your clothes off. And then he was like, what? Are you for real? So I was like, yeah.
That's not the wildest one, y'all. That's not the wildest one.
That's the PG-13.
But Arthur, and I remember you sharing with me and Deanna about one of the nights, right? And so it didn't make y'all feel no type of way, like to line these women up, that these women just line up and go from you, your partner, your other partner, the other one, the other one, the other one?
No, because of so music plays a real part in your growing up. Like I told you, like before everybody was shooting their gun like this. But then when Men in Society came out and Old Dog was shooting the gun sideways, everybody started shooting the gun sideways. Everybody was selling drugs, but not to the degree until New Jack City came out. Mm-hmm. Then when we saw the movie Scarface. Mm-hmm. So now you got a bunch of kids that grew up under Poison Clan, that rap group, Two Live Crew, Too Short, Luke Skywalker. So that's all we listen. So these kids now listen to Bush in the Head,
drill music,
and take a lot of drugs. Mm-hmm. We listen to, you know, pimp music, you know, 8 Ball, the MJG, Poison Clan got a song called I Hate Hoes, Hoes Hate Me. Mm-hmm. You know, so we listen to those type of songs.
You feel like it just was depicted out in your life.
Right.
Like we mimic the things, music and that entertainment.
And so we was just having fun. It was no thought about a woman being degraded. It was no thought about this somebody's sister, this somebody's mama. It was no thought towards that.
And so now, looking back on it now, like, what? How do you feel
so
about your gangster party?
Yeah, I wish I can go back and some of the people that I have apologized to, mm-hmm. and some of them, you know, it's even as I'm talking to you now, it's a hurtful thing to know that somebody can see you mm-hmm. and wish they would have never met you. And you might not know it, and they may not say it to you, but this person that dealt with you and loved you and thought that you loved them too, and then made them do all these horrific type of sexual acts, they still got to live with what they did. And so when they see you, even if they don't say it to you, it's the thought that I wish I would have never met this idiot.
Do you feel like that some women looked at, like, now that they're grown, do you feel like they felt like y'all was abusers? Or do you feel like they look at it as we were just young and just wild?
Some of them probably, but most of them, they have to look at it as we was young and wild because they participated in on, like, it was, you know, it was some situations where manipulation played a big part. Mm-hmm. Got slapped, it played a big part. I remember my homeboy telling me, he talking about, all right, they got R. Kelly, they got Puffy, he's telling me, you next.
That ain't funny.
Don't even tell me. But I used to tell them, I said, they was grown and they knew what they was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you feel like, you feel like the music played a part in it, right?
The music definitely played a part in it. And then being young, so that's why y'all got to be careful with your kids and these phones. So back then, we didn't have the phone, but we had the VHS tapes. So mama them had all the porn.
Mm-hmm.
Might have bootylicious porn on it. But so we sneak and find them. Now we in the house by ourselves. So we watch the tape. If you're a kid, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Mm.
And so you can have an innocent child that has their phone and scroll it on TikTok. And when it pop up, if they click it one time, so you just imagine a kid playing Fortnite at 10 o'clock at night. And then he get bored of Fortnite and just scroll TikTok. He in the room by himself. And then he click the button and it pops up. Boom. And he see it. So now he trying to find the rest of it. But you got to subscribe and do all this extra stuff. So he can't do all of that. But now he trying to figure out because he done saw it. He can't unsee it.
Mm.
Now at 10 o'clock at night, you think he's still on TikTok. No, he looking at porn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then when he come out of the room at 15 to 16, you don't even know who he is. So mama then was leaving us. Back then, you like, I don't know, kids ain't really into this stuff now, but like back then, you were hunting your cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Like
playing hide and go get.
Yeah, you were playing hide and go get with your cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're going to get to it, but like back then, the family member will molest you, and they keep it on the hush.
You know, back then, that still goes on to this day, and it's sad that I feel like it just keeps getting handed down from one generation to the next, where it's not, you know, spoken about, shared. Like, did you ever share with your mom what happened to you, or you never shared?
Never shared. No, nobody. I don't think I shared it with nobody.
Yeah.
So, like, and going back to the women, I think so because the enemy knows your calling.
Mm-hmm.
So the enemy, so Satan was up there with God. So this is what people fail to realize: like Satan can see stuff too, because he's a spirit, and he don't have the same power as God, but he does have power.
Mm-hmm.
So Satan already knew this day here. But God knew it too. So his attack was on me and everywhere he could attack me. And so with the women, I already had the gift to speak and people listen. But it was God that gave it to me. I just didn't know it was from God and used it for my own selfish gain. Mm. The Bible said the gifts of God is without repentance. So when I speak, people listen. Whether they get mad at what you're saying or whether they enjoy what you're saying, they listen. And so the enemy knew that he was going to get that to use that against me to make women do all type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, but I know now why the attack was there, because the woman, mm-hmm. and the guy's probably going to get mad at this too, but the woman is the best thing that ever happened to this world.
Ooh, say it again. Say it one more time for the people in the back.
And I could prove it. I could prove it though. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, it was Adam, right? So Adam had all of the animals. He was running the garden. He had all the food. He done named all of the animals. He got a relationship with God. God come and visited him in the cool of the day. Adam had everything that he needed in this world. Mm-hmm. And God looked at him and said, it is not good for man to be alone.
Right.
So if Adam had everything that he needed, and God said, it's not good for him to be alone, why didn't God make him a brother? Mm-hmm. If it wasn't good for him to be alone, why didn't God make him a nephew or a cousin or,
right.
or a daughter? Why, out of all the things that he can make for Adam to not be alone, he made him a woman. And I say this jokingly. So when God makes something, he makes it perfect. So you just imagine Adam seeing two zebras. So he ain't seen nobody with legs and arms like him. So I'm just wild imagination. You got two zebras. Adam seeing two zebras having sex. Mm-hmm. He done seen two monkeys having sex. But he ain't seen nobody like him.
Like him.
And then God comes and makes him a woman. So in my imagination, this is how Eve looked. You know, she had the perfect boobs. Because God made her. She had the perfect butt. She had the perfect legs. She had the perfect face. She had the perfect hair. And he said, I got a surprise for you.
Yeah.
And then he tells him in a nice PG-13 way, be fruitful and multiply.
Mm. But not like with the six kids, with six different women.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, with
Can't
one.
Can't
leave
that out.
But the woman doesn't know that. Some women know it, and most women do, but most women don't know that they possess, they the prize. We are not the prize, man. We run the game like we the prize, but we are not the prize. The woman is the prize. This is how you know the woman is the prize. Everybody want a woman, or everybody want to be a woman. If you gay, you want to be a woman. Mm-hmm. If you straight, you want a woman.
Right.
Everybody want a woman.
Yeah. I agree with you from the beginning.
The man want a woman. The woman want a woman. The gay man want to be a woman.
Right.
Everybody want a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, in your childhood, there was things that like took place that you have not spoken about.
So I haven't had this conversation with nobody. And it's just the grace of God that I don't hold nothing. Like, I believe this is wholeheartedly. The reason why people can't talk about stuff, because they ain't healed from it. The reason they can't talk about it, because they haven't forgave the person. Unforgiveness keeps you tied to the hurt. It keeps you tied to the offense. And it keeps you tied to the person who caused the offense. But once you forgive them, you release from it. Say, for instance, we get mad right now and you do something to me. And I'm mad at you. I'm blown at you. I said, I ain't gonna never forgive Angela for what she did. You done moved all the way to Brazil, living your best life. I ain't seen you since, and I'm still sitting over here mad at you. You don't even know it. Mm-hmm. So who bothered by it? You or me?
Right.
And so when I was, I want to say maybe 7 or 8, 9, 10 years old, I got molested by one of my cousins. He used to be our babysitter. And I don't even know if my other siblings was molested by him. Mm-hmm. We didn't even never had a conversation.
Because you never talked about it.
Never talked about it.
Right.
But I remember him molesting me. And I don't know for sure. This is just the best way I can remember it. I don't know whether he put his finger in me. I don't know whether he put his penis in me. I don't know if he put hot sauce in me. But I remember every time I went to the bathroom, it would burn for a long time. I used to hate going to the bathroom. And I never talked about it. And I know now because back then you didn't talk to kids like that. Mm-hmm. If somebody touch you, you better make sure you say something. Don't let nobody touch you here. Nobody had these conversations with us. And so when it happens, you don't know what to do.
At that time, do you feel like you knew, did you know like it was wrong or you didn't even know that it was wrong?
Like I can't even, like I could, what I told you is what I could tell you. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember how I felt about it. I can't even remember whether I thought it was right or wrong. I just know for a fact it happened. I didn't tell nobody. I can't remember. And even in the person, he know.
Did you ever say something to your cousin? Did you ever confront him?
Never.
Still to this day?
Still to this day.
But you've forgiven him.
Yeah. And so like, and it's the grace. Like, some people have that grace on them. Like my stepdaddy beat the brakes off my mom. And he became my dad. Mm-mm. Like, this particular cousin, I want to say he called me one time for some money, and I sent him some money. I let him borrow some money. He didn't pay me, but, yeah, I think I did that. And I never had the conversation with him about it. It's only the grace of God. I don't have a reason why I forgave him. Now, other people... I've prayed for them and prayed that God get whatever it is in my heart out of my heart because I don't want it to hinder me from what you got for me.
Wow.
And so, but I don't know for his situation, but for my stepdad, like, he beat my mama to death. And when I got older, I used to get drunk. And he was by that time, he was a drunk himself and on drugs. And I would... All the chicks I used to hang out with, we would party, get drunk, and I would take them to his house. And I would say, this is my dad. And the crazy part about it, even though I was his stepchild, I looked just like him. So everybody thought that he was my real dad. Mm-hmm. And so I would introduce him to the girl. I would give him money to get alcohol, and I knew he was going to buy drugs with others. But for some way, he became my dad. On his deathbed, he said this, and they called me Punkin when I was a kid. So he said, Punkin was more of my biological son than my biological kids.
Even after he did y'all wrong when y'all was little?
But I went and seen him when he was sick. I went to the house and made sure he was all right because I never knew my dad. I never knew my biological dad.
Have you met your dad to this day?
Never met him. And so even though he did wrong, he became my biological dad. And so I didn't have, like when I had a female, I didn't have a dad to come and say, hey. So he was that guy. And when I come and bring him, he drunk, he looking crazy. But I wasn't even ashamed of it because that was my dad. And at the funeral, I was hurt and was crying. And I was having this conversation with myself, like, why are you crying? This joke used to be the praise of your mama. I was wondering, but we had to gain a relationship and everything.
You have forgiven him.
And so, but after when he died, I was hurt because in my head, that was the last part of my mom, because my mom passed before him. Mm. So in my head, that was the last part of my mom. That was left.
Wow. Wow. And forgiveness. To Arthur, do you feel like forgiveness is necessary?
You gotta forgive. Like, so this for somebody who's struggling with forgiveness. Say for instance, somebody done molested you. And you ain't told nobody, but you can't get past it. This is what I tell people. Pray for that person. The Bible says, pray for those who despitefully use you. So it's a lot of principles in the Bible that we just don't use. So this is one thing that God showed me. So I started praying for the person, but my prayers weren't sincere because I don't like the person. But over a period of time, my prayers start being sincere. And once my prayers start being sincere, God started releasing the forgiveness in me.
Mm.
And I had a guy, we was locked up in the county jail together, and he used to go for bad, and he used to get on my nerves. Like, I didn't want to hear his voice. I mean, it irked me to death. And I was in jail trying to get myself right with God. But that thing irked me. He didn't even know that he was getting on my last nerve. And so I said, Lord, I got to get a handle of this. What's going on? God said, pray for him. Pray for who? I hope he get time. I went, oh, they found him guilty. And so that was my first time practicing it. I started praying for him. And then I started praying that he get visits. I started praying for his case. I started praying that his family come see him. So I ended up getting out. And me and this guy end up being cool. I end up coming back to the jail, buying him boxers, T-shirts, and socks and stuff. And to this day, he's locked up now with a life sentence. If you reach out to me, I send him money.
Do you feel like there was ever a time in your life that you needed forgiveness?
Yeah, I need forgiveness for all them women I messed up. Right? I need forgiveness for them people I robbed. I need forgiveness for the dope I sold. Like I told you, like, we always complain about the white folk, the Ku Klux Klan and all this. No, I helped them. All my drugs were sold to black people. So, like, I helped kill the community. Like, it's some people that smoke dope that wish they would have never met me either.
So, Arthur, outside of, like, everything you just named about forgiveness, is there anything else that you feel like you need forgiveness for?
Yeah, I was in an accident, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was five of us in a car. My wife wasn't my wife at the time. She was my girlfriend. She was on the driver's side. We was in a Suburban, a SUV. I was on the passenger side. I had one of my homeboys in the back seat, and I had one of my homegirls in the back seat, and I had another homeboy in the third row seat. And they rode with me from Augusta to drop one of our other homeboys off in Atlanta. And none of them is supposed to be in the car. I got all three of them to go with me in order to drop my homeboy off because I was already drinking and I didn't need somebody to help me drive back. So when we got there, I went and picked up my girlfriend.
Now your wife, right.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could remember they say we went to a couple of strip club, but I know I was drinking before we even got on the road. So I'm in the passenger side. I think we're on 285 somewhere. And I'm joking with her, playing. And I grabbed the steering wheel. And when I grabbed the steering wheel, the car, the Suburban went sideways and started flipping. And all I remember is the first of the car getting ready to go over.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like a bird cage dropped on me. And it's like I bounced in the bird cage. And then when I came to, the bird cage was gone. So when I came to, the Suburban is upside down. And I looked and the seats was in the air.
Mm.
So I knew then that we was upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my homegirls, her arm was up under the Suburban. So the Suburban was on her arm and it was like the Suburban was here and she was right here. And so I was able to like crawl halfway out and put my hand on her neck to see if she had a pulse. My other homeboy, he out in the middle of the street, you know, hollering, saying he messed up. My girlfriend, wife at the time, she wasn't my wife at the time. She in the street, she hollering. And so
you can see all this from laying in the
side. Mm-hmm. So, and I can hear it too. And so my homeboy was the only one kind of like focused, but a little out of it too. So I was like, check for my other homeboy. I say, where he at? He said, he down the street. So evidently he got thrown out and was down the street.
So that was the person that was sitting on the third row.
On the third row. Mm-hmm. So I said, my homegirl, I'm just saying homegirl, so I'm gonna call now. I said, she got a pulse. I said, go check and see if he got a pulse. So he went, he said, man, he messed up. So I started talking to her and saying, you're gonna be all right. You got a pulse. And so by that time, the ambulance and police hadn't came. So when the police came, I remember telling her, help here. But I also remember that it stopped, the pulse stopped. Mm. But I was like, help here. And so they was like, sir, we got to help you. So I was like, no, I'm okay. Get her. So it's like, no, sir, we got to help you. So I was like, no, I'm okay. Get her. And so they didn't want to tell me that she was already dead. So they said, sir, we got to get you. She already gone. And so they put the stretcher in on the gurney and put me in and pulled me out over her. So she died on the scene. Mm-hmm. We get to the hospital. My wife still got cuts to this day. My homeboy still got cuts to this day. And the other homeboy, he died the next day in the hospital. So I'm in the hospital. Two of my friends done died. Well, one, when I was in the hospital at the time, one had done died and one was in messed up condition. And all that was, it was my fault. And so.
Because you knew what happened.
I knew what happened.
Yeah.
So me, only person that really knew what happened was me and my wife. So my homeboy, even though he was in the car, he didn't really know what happened because they didn't know we were just up there. I was up there joking and playing. They didn't know. They just was in a ride. They just was riding. And so nobody knew that it was my fault. So for a while, they was blaming my wife for it. And so I remember going to see her mom. I was going to get my phone and stuff that they hadn't got out of the car. And so she wouldn't let me see her daughter. She was like, no, she don't want to see you right now. She messed up. And so, but I remember the mom coming to me and say, what happened? She was the first person I told. I said, I caused the accident by playing. And she was like, what were you thinking? And so then the next day, my partner, he died. So now my homeboy, his mom and his uncle came to pick us up from Atlanta. And so I told myself, I said, when I get in this car, once the car get up to 80 miles an hour, I'm going to jump out of the car.
Because you wanted to end your life.
I wanted to end it. Because I didn't think I was going to be able to handle or even just, because these were my friends. Like, and so we got in the car. I made sure I got by a door, but I was going to be by a door anyway because there's four of us in a car. But in my head, I was like, I'm going to make sure I get by a door. And so my homeboy uncle was driving. His mom was on the passenger side, and me and my homeboy was in the back seat. And at the time, he didn't know. Later on, we talked about it. He said, you had a look in your face that I never saw before. Mm-hmm. And so I told him years later, I said, I was going to jump out the car.
Because you felt like it was better to end your life than to try to go on.
Right. And it was I hadn't already been dealing with so much already, you know, just getting in trouble. Drugs, partying, and then this. And it happened because of me partying and getting drunk. And so when we was riding, I had my hand on the door, and I'm just waiting. And I don't know what. I know now God kept me in the car. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, we was in Augusta.
Just as the cage, the bird cage.
Yeah.
What do you liken that to?
So it was this protection. Like, I don't know why. But God protects me. I don't know why. Like, all of the hurt that I've caused people, all of the stuff that I've done, like, this is how I look at it. I don't deserve a good wife.
Ooh.
Because of all the pain I've caused women. Like, I don't deserve the friends that I have because all the people that I've hurt and robbed. Like, I got a son. I don't even deserve the 11-year-old son that I have. Like.
But you ask God to give you that the chance to be raised in that household, to raise
right.
one of your kids. And Elijah, this is the first one
right.
that you were there,
right.
sober.
Right.
Seen the delivery.
Right.
And now you get to take him to school and you ask
right.
God.
Yeah, I asked. And so I don't know why God, and it's just personal for me. I don't know why he loved me. I ain't saying he don't love nobody else. But it's a scripture in the Bible that says God will rewrite your resume.
Mm.
Like Paul, we don't know. Paul was Saul, but we don't talk about Saul. We all we see is Paul now. Paul comes, he writes 2/3 of the Old New Testament. Mm-hmm. And Paul is one of the most powerful apostles in the Bible. Not Peter, not John, none of them. Mm-hmm. Like, Paul was so powerful that Paul was preaching, and you can go look it up. Paul was preaching, and a man was in the window listening. Paul preached so long, the man fell out of the window and died.
Mm-hmm. Like you just made the camera die because you talked so long.
So, yeah. Paul went to raise him back from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So like all of the hurt that I caused in women, I got a magnificent wife. Like when I trust my wife, not saying that she ain't human and she can't cheat and can't do this and that, but I trust her. And I told her, it's a lot of people that's married and they'll do these prenups. Prenup is only saying that if it don't work. Prenup saying, I really don't trust you. Like, I'm going to marry you. I love you. But if anything go wrong, I'm leaving what I came with. You leaving what you came with. When I married my wife, I took all reservations out of my head. I don't have a plan B.
Mm.
If I trust my wife, if it don't work, I have to come up with a plan B.
Because, Arthur, y'all been through so much, though.
Yeah.
You've known her since she was 13 years old. She stayed through infidelities
right.
through the other women.
Right.
Then y'all end up in jail together behind the right. car accident.
Right.
So she was made for you.
Yeah, she was made for me. Like.
And then do you know, and I feel like God, you saying you don't know why he loves you so much or why. Arthur, it's the very thing you're walking in right now. Yeah. It's for you to help those kids that we help every single day. Those are your chances. Those are your do-overs.
God, so from the guy that I was, like, I have officiated maybe 3 or 4 funerals. I have married, officiated my sister-in-law wedding, my mother-in-law wedding. I have ministered at the church where the guy ordained me. In the prison, that was the chaplain order. Even like to the day, I tell my homeboys how I sit in the federal judges with them and have conversation with them. Like that don't supposed to happen. So for me, I was supposed to be somewhere with AIDS. With 6 baby mamas, that means there was no protection.
Right.
For the aggravated assaults and armed robberies, I should be somewhere doing a life sentence. Mm-hmm. I don't have a life sentence. And just for the drugs and the alcohol, I should be somewhere strung out on drugs mm-hmm. and sick. But.
And accident. You could have got
in an accident. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I do know the best is yet to come.
You're walking in it. Yeah. You're walking in it. Yeah. You're walking in it. Tell me something you need to break free from.
Poverty. So I got a son. He told me this. He said, I'm his hero. Mm. He said, I listen to you more than you think. He told me one time we was right. He said, you got everything. He said, the only thing you missing is some money. He said, you got everything. And so, and I'm going to say this here. I don't try to be a better somebody else. Like, I like who I am. I just want to be a better version of me.
Oh.
And sometimes people get intimidated by that. Like, I'm not trying to outdo you. I'm trying to outdo me. Like, I honestly look in the mirror and like what I see.
Right. My friend Giz, he has a running joke with me. He was like, you always in competition with yourself.
Right. Yeah. I want to be a better version of me. And God has given me the opportunity.
Yeah, and you're walking in it. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming through today.
I appreciate you allowing me to come in here and tell all my business.
Is that what you call it, telling your business, or did you come on to break, help people break free?
I came on to break free. I believe you got to tell your story. Whatever it is, don't be afraid to tell your story. You know, you got to give God the glory in your story, but you got to tell your story, because if you don't tell your story, nobody will never know. And somebody needs to hear your story. I'm glad Job told his story. Mm-hmm. Glad Peter told his story, how he was scared. I'm glad Don Thomas told his story. I'm glad we know Jesus' story. I'm glad I know Free's story.
Now you know my story. I'm glad I know Arthur's story. And I'm glad that your wife, because listen, y'all, I've been trying to get Arthur to come on a podcast since last season, and he wouldn't do it. And so we got stuck in New Jersey maybe like 2 months ago. We went up there for a peace rally, and we ended up couldn't get back out. Now, we flying Delta. Come, y'all know me. I am about Delta. Everything. We could not get out, and we end up having to stay at a hotel one night. We was in the Sky Club for hours. That didn't work. And what it ended on the back end, how we looked at it, is that those moments were needed for me, Arthur, Deanna, Kaysen, to bond, and for Arthur, too, to become more comfortable with telling the story, with sharing his testimony. And that day after we got home or whatever, 2 days later, I knew in my mind and my heart that we had to do the interview. And I asked him again. He said, no. Then he told me maybe about 3 weeks ago, oh, I got a partner. He'll be really, really good for the podcast. I said, I'm not interested. Let me know when Arthur Jones is interested.
Yeah, you can tell me that.
So, guys, I pray that something was said today. I know something was said today that you can help and apply. This is a real person with a real story, very authentic. And you see, he's nothing what he looked like or what he's been through.
And if I can leave y'all with one thing, it's never how you start, it's always how you end.
There you have it. Never how you start, always how you end. And you know my thing, it's always delusion until they see it happen. I'll see you next time.